From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. My next guest is award-winning author Bill Konigsberg. He's best known for his LGBTQ novels. He wrote Out of the Pocket, Openly Straight, The Porcupine of Truth, and others, and he's joining me today to talk about his new book called The Bridge, released in September. He says something that really resonated with me, as I think it will with our listeners. He says, and perhaps the best answer is not to tolerate differences, not even to accept them, but to celebrate them. Maybe then those who are different would feel more loved and less, well, tolerated. And Bill Konigsberg, you help celebrate these differences with all of these wonderful young adult novels, I think, about the most important genre out there. So Bill, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
So I'm really curious about how a writer decides to go into writing young adult novels. I do think it's so important. And we all, as young adults, you know, when we were teens, we all remember those books that really impacted us. And I feel like there's a whole big reason and a story behind this.
I think there are probably two things I'd point to. One is that what you said about how we all resonate with these stories is especially true for LGBTQ people, because coming out is something that you either know what that's like or you don't. And for those of us who came out as teenagers, I continually go back there when I think about the most challenging and the most alive moments of my life. And so I think I write for that reason, because it's that part of my life. I think the other thing is that I wanted to write the books that helped save my life. You know, when I was younger, when I was in the 1980s, there were not LGBT books. That wasn't a thing, really. I mean, there were some, but certainly not young adult titles. And when I first read a book with a character like me, it changed my life. It made me feel seen. So I thought, I'm going to pay that forward.
What was that book?
Actually, the book was Tales of the City by Armistead Maupin. It was recently made into a series, I think, on maybe Netflix. But it wasn't an entirely gay book, but it was a book with a diverse cast of characters. And when I saw those characters, I saw my own heart. Mm. And it was the first time I thought, maybe I'm going to be okay.
Yeah. What a crucial time. And I know that you're familiar with Utah, and we have such a high teen suicide rate, especially among LGBTQ youth. There are a couple of beliefs about the reasons for that, you know, with a predominant religion and, you know, families just not knowing how to deal with it and pretending that it'll go away, or kids can be changed, or they're just going through a phase. And I mean, you help really transport these kids through that stage.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think that unless you are a person, unless you are LGBT, you probably don't know what it's like to be different in a fundamental way from your biological family. And that's the key. It's a level of disconnection that is very hard for a lot of kids to overcome. And, you know, it is bad in places like Utah. It's bad in Arizona as well, where I live. And there is an answer to it. And the answer is simply communication. Whether or not a person believes that it's okay to be LGBT isn't the issue here. This is a health and safety issue. You know, we talk to our kids and we let them tell us where they're at so that they stay with us.
Yeah. I was in a meeting with some kids, the board of the Gay Straight Alliance at Park City High School a couple weeks ago. And I just have to relate this. They kept saying LGBT. And I finally said, you guys, I have been trying to practice for years now saying LGBTQ. that felt so jumbled in my mouth and I would get it all mixed up, but I never said, I'm kind of acronym challenged anyway. I said, why are you just saying LGBT? And they said, oh, well, the Q is just, it's just a lot of letters.
That's right.
Is that consistent with what you would say?
Well, I mean, a different interview, I might have said LGBTQIA+. It was just the first thing that tripped out of my mouth. So it is, in fact, exactly that. It's just, it's a lot of letters. We want to make sure everybody feels included, but it's exhausting sometimes to catch up.
Before we get to your story, The Bridge, which I'm pretty excited about, I want to ask you this question about pronouns. You know, more and more people in their signatures are putting, you know, she, her, hers. And in meetings, I'm involved in a social equity cohort here in Park City, and people, you know, they state their pronouns. And it's a new thing for someone in my generation, even in your generation, asking the kids about that. They were saying, you know, even our parents, who are so open to us coming out and they're so supportive, they just can't get the pronouns. And part of it is our English language, that we don't have, there's no singular.
Right.
For
non-binary person.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And as a writer, is that difficult for you?
Well, I'll be honest and say that as a 50-year-old person, it remains a little bit difficult for me. We're all creatures of habit. And so I see a definite generation gap of people doing that. And I'm trying to do better. It's very, very important to me that I'm never excluding somebody, because I know what that feels like. But I'm guessing that problem is going to be solved at some point. Recently, as a teacher, I read something where a student used ZIE as a new word. And I'm all, as a writer, I'm all for people making language work for them. So it's all very interesting to me. And yes, I'm not a big fan of they, because it always sounds to me like we're talking about people.
Plural, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've heard the Z as well, and it seems like it hasn't really caught on, which is a shame, because that would accommodate a lot of people. Mm-hmm. For those people who say, why should I have to identify myself as she, her, hers, when it's pretty obvious, I was born this gender, I identify with this gender, I look female or male, why should I have to make that distinction?
It's a point that, honestly, it's a valid point. I can understand how people feel that way, because that is how it's always been. You know, the point is to be empathic and empathetic to other people. And there are many people out there who don't have that experience. And so instead of leaving it on them to tell us what their gender is, we are trying to be more inclusive by saying, you know what, just let us know, everybody, let's all state our gender. We'll see. I'm curious. I think this is something that's going to continue to change over time.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. Well, let's talk about The Bridge, your new book, released in September. Is that right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how has it been received so far? I've read some critic reviews. People are just spellbound by it.
Well, thank you. It has been received very nicely, and I'm thrilled about that. It's a bit of a departure for me. So The Bridge is a book about two teens. One of them is gay and one of them is not. They meet on top of the George Washington Bridge in New York City, and they're both there to jump. They interrupt each other, and based on what happens the moment that they are staring at each other 100 feet apart with one leg over the railing each, the world actually splits into four different realities. So we get every possibility of what could happen in the next moment. And it's four different stories. The first story, the girl jumps and the boy doesn't. In the second, the boy jumps and the girl doesn't. In the third, they both jump. And in the fourth, neither jumps. And the reason that I did that was I know, as a person who suffered from depression, that my brain lies to me when I'm depressed and tells me there are no options. And so I wanted to make it very clear that, in fact, there are options, and here's what could happen.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Depression and suicide, anxiety, they're very prevalent in our society right now, and, you know, at all ages, I believe. But it's so important for our teenagers to get through, you know, if they can just get through this time of life. But it's so overwhelming. And a lot of that is because they feel alone. A lot of kids at that age don't talk to their parents. They don't know that there are groups that they can go to. What would you say about that to someone who may be going through this right now?
I think that the key is to say something that parents can say that maybe kids won't listen to, but it's just true. You are never alone. Any feeling that a person has been felt before by somebody else. And it's really important to know that in those moments when we feel so alone, that in fact we're not. You know, people are so similar in reality, even though we separate with all of the different labels that we use. Most people struggle as teenagers. And it doesn't feel fun and it doesn't make it better to say that, but what we want are people to stay another day. And that's what I've been saying across the country recently. It's just, we have to stay another day because the next day is when the magic might happen. I mean, that's where we're at.
That's really nice. Stay another day. We have a pretty active training here in Park City on QPR, question, persuade, refer, as a means our Mental Health Alliance wants to get everyone trained on that as a means to kind of help say, stay another day. But I like that. Tomorrow's when the magic may happen.
Yeah, that's right. We can't know if we're not here. And I am so glad that I'm here. The fact is that I could easily not be here. I had a suicide attempt at 27. It could have happened as a teenager. It just happened years later. All of the same issues you might expect. And I'm a lucky one, you know. But when I think about it, I think about the butterfly effect and how, you know, I thought that it wouldn't matter if I were alive or not. And here we are talking on the radio today. So in fact, it did matter. You know, there are other obvious things, but millions of them.
Mm-hmm. How often do you go on speaking tours? And I would imagine they're all sort of at middle schools and high schools and maybe to parent groups.
Well, fairly often, of course, right now with the pandemic, not at all, but the talks are probably going to change because we're going to be talking. I really want to talk about mental health. I think it's so important that we get over this taboo. And as you might imagine, schools, you know, both of the issues that in my life I've wanted to talk about are challenging for schools, LGBTQIA+ issues and mental health. But I'm one who believes that we must talk about this, that in fact, it's life-saving to go out and allow people to see themselves in a speaker. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We have to let kids see that.
Yeah, absolutely. What are the top two or three questions that you get when you speak to a group of young people?
I think that young people, well, in terms of the gay issues, what I get the most is, when did you first know? Which generally means to me, they want to know if what they're feeling is normal. And of course, everything is normal because it's just, we all are the same. And the other one would be, have you ever faced discrimination? And I can speak about that for a good 30, 40 minutes, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, the discrimination, it's interesting to note that now, say, at the high schools, the middle schools, the high schools, when kids are coming out, it is in a way that is unfathomable for me to have thought about in my high school in the early 80s in a small town in Idaho. Like, it just didn't happen. And I feel like, wow, there's just so much allowance and acceptance and inclusion now comparatively, but I still don't think, you know, we're not there, obviously.
Well, we're so much better than we were. And that's something that's important to state. However, Struggle is struggle and challenge is challenge. And so teens don't, when I say in my day it was this, that's not going to resonate with a young person. Yeah. What resonates is simply talking about our shared experience. So, you know, it's hard. It's still hard. And by the way, what I've noticed, doesn't matter if I'm talking in, if I'm speaking in Arkansas or New York City, it varies by household. You know, there are some kids who have better situations than other kids. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter where they live.
Yeah, absolutely. Your book, Openly Straight, you had a quote about that too. It's like, there's no such thing, right, as openly straight. Like, straight people just don't get it, you say. Right. And why is it that straight people don't get it?
Straight people don't get it because all my life, including to now, when I go out, and I'm a fairly masculine looking man, people don't know that I'm gay. So I have to either tell them, which means coming out, or not tell them and risk perhaps being in a situation where I'm withholding information that they might find useful. It's exhausting. You know, being LGBTQIA+ is something you cannot fathom until you're on an airplane sitting next to somebody who says, I see you have a wedding ring. Are you married? What's your wife's name?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that along with that, I'm thinking you're in a situation where you're meeting someone and you think that the next time you meet them, you may be with your husband. And so is better to tell them now than next time to show up with your husband and have them.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly. You hit it on the head. It's a challenge mentally to kind of just slow the thinking down and realize I'm not doing anything wrong. This is simply how life works.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, in the last month or two, I've interviewed two people. One was talking, they were both women. They were talking about, one had written a book about anxiety. Another was like a sleep expert and a yogini. And during the course of the interview, they just really naturally and just off the cuff said, my wife this, my wife that. And it was in the same week. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool that in an interview that they know is going before, you know, many people, they just mention it as though,
right,
you know, in the same way that I say, oh, my husband this or my husband that, which that's how it ought to be. And yet we recognize it as a point that we've arrived at, that's this big, you know, place that we've somehow achieved.
Well, we've achieved it through representation in media. I mean, that's the big difference. Mm-hmm. And I think the big mover is television and movies. You know, books, you know, we have a wider audience. There is a wider audience in television, obviously. And because of that representation, people feel empowered to do what is normal, as you say. It is normal just for me to say husband, which I do now.
Yeah, good. My guest is Bill Konigsberg. His newly released book is called The Bridge. It's about two young people, Aaron and Tilly, who meet on the George Washington Bridge when they're both about to jump off. We don't really know how this, well, the story actually ends in four different ways, as you say. And that's a really beautiful way of doing it, of making people realize what the downstream effect is.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a very new way of writing for me, but interesting because I was very aware of how the different characters were in such different places, not just the main characters, but people who knew them based on those choices. It really underlined for me the sanctity of life, frankly, you know, that one person's life or one person's absence makes a huge difference.
Do you feel like suicide is a crime of passion, that it's not calculated, even though there may have been suicidal ideation ahead of time, that really it's this of the moment thing, and if one can get past the moment? I mean, I'm sure it takes all forms, but
I think it takes all forms. So I think that it can be that. I think it can be a cry for help. I think it can be simply people like Aaron and Tilly who's really saying, I just can't take anymore. And you know, the thing is that depression is real and the illness of depression is real. And we, we need to talk about that, because I've had people read the book who say, well, what Aaron's dealing with isn't enough. And that's for him to kill himself, which is the same thing as a parent saying, you have nothing to be depressed about. Mm-hmm. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of what's going on. But if we could get to a point where people could actually say to each other, I'm suffering from the mental illness of depression, we might have a different conversation.
Absolutely. Well, what a pleasure it's been speaking with you, Bill. I really appreciate you coming and joining me on The Mountain Life. Once that vaccine gets widely distributed, you can come up and speak to our young people. We'd love that.
I would absolutely love that. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.